What's up, Beardos? You're listening to episode 192 of The Bearded Vegans.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to, don't be a jerk.
Don't answer the question first. Not answer the question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talk about beards.
The show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com, and you can always reach us by emailing thebeardvegans@gmail.com.
In today's very special live episode, we'll be answering several listener-submitted questions before going out into our audience of thousands and soliciting questions.
That's right. We are coming to everyone live from the Atlantic City Vegan Food Festival. Congrats to everyone in here that actually found this room.
Yes. Andy, it's always embarrassing doing these live episodes because people find out that we have to read our intro thing that we've said now 192 times.
It does ruin the illusion a little bit. It also feels like we're at like a banquet award dinner right now with everyone sitting at these little tables. So feel free to like move close and make us feel comfortable.
So last year, we did our podcast in a different room, and this room that we are...
You're using the term room pretty loosely, Paul.
A different cutout of the hall. And where we are recording from this year is where we were playing mini golf.
Sadly, a 54-hole mini golf course has bit the dust, and we are recording on its hallowed grounds right this very second.
The ghosts of mini golf are coming through this podcast.
I hope so. Paul, my favorite part about last year was the person that was eating a hot dog at the same table we were recording at.
Yes. That was also strange.
Okay, speaking of eating, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Always talk about food. Have you eaten anything in the short time that you've been in Atlantic City that is worth mentioning?
I have. Yes, I have. So I tried this new thing out. It's from Syracuse called Teddy Eddie's. Yes, that's it. I got it. And it was a burger. It was a cheeseburger. I feel like it was a good mix between if I wanted something junky and I wanted something healthy. So it was like, it was like I ate it and I'm like, I feel good about eating this. I feel healthy about eating this, but it still had that burger ring to it. So
for the listener, Paul is doing an Italian hand right now.
And also talking to this rockabilly microphone. So yeah, I would give them a shout out. It was something new, something I've never had before. So
cool.
It's good.
I had something that is not new to me, but I have not had in a while, and that is Bunny Treats, which is a lot of baked goods that are out there, and she is currently serving a Pop-Tart. Paul, I'm a sucker for anything Pop-Tart related.
So Pop-Tarts.
Anything Pop-Tart related. And there's heart-shaped strawberry and candied ginger Pop-Tarts out there. Very good.
Sounds very good.
All right. So enough indulging us in our food. So when we do live episodes, we think it's really fun to actually interact with people as opposed to us like doing a lot of pre-prepared stuff. So we want to get questions from everybody. In order to lighten things up or like loosen things up a little bit, I know it's always scary to be the first person to ask a question. So we have two listener emails that we're going to go through that'll probably take us a good amount of time to talk about. And while we're doing that, think of questions that you want to ask.
Cool. So our first question comes from Lisa B, who emailed in. And basically Lisa's story was they were ordering some clothing online and the order said it came with a free gift. And they made a little note to themselves like, I should probably email. It's a clothing item, but I should probably email them and make sure it's something that's actually vegan. Make sure it's not some beauty product or something like that. And as with everyone's busy lives, it kind of got pushed to the side and forgot to do it. The product came and it ended up being a lotion that had beeswax in it. And Lisa was like, ugh, like I should have sent out this email, but now I have this thing and I don't know what to do with this. So let me pick up. Lisa says, normally when someone gives me a non-vegan gift, I'll do one of two things depending on the situation. One, politely declining the gift, if possible, is my first choice so that they can do something else with it and they'll know in the future not to give me non-vegan gifts. Or two, if I can't politely decline it, I'll just throw it out. I don't want to put it in or on my body, and the idea of regifting it to someone feels wrong. It feels like I'm condoning the product if I give it to someone else. It feels like saying, I can't use this because I'm vegan, but since you're not vegan, there's no moral problem with you using it. and that's not the message that I want to send. I don't have a problem with vegans who regift things, it totally makes sense, and obviously as a zero waste person, I hate the idea of wasting anything, but for me, the vegan message comes first before zero waste, and I just can't look a non-vegan in the eye and encourage them to use animal products. If this gift were something with meat, dairy, or eggs, I would have done option one or two without thinking twice. But since it's beeswax, it did make me pause for a second. Why is it that I can imagine just using up the lotion and then throwing away the package and trying to forget about it? It would seem grotesque to me to do that with a product that contained meat, dairy, or eggs, but for some reason beeswax makes me feel like I should just use this stupid thing and then throw it out, instead of just throwing it out without using it. I suppose it doesn't really matter in the end. I just need to take the lesson away from this that I need to be even more proactive about refusing gifts.
All right, Paul. So we've had, I think, a number of questions on the show before about receiving non-vegan gifts, and normally I'm like, we got this, because we'll just recommend one or two of the things that are happening right there. But the third option would be to give it to somebody that can use it. And so I guess that's what makes this particular question different, is me giving someone something in some way condoning it, and does it sort of perpetuate the oppression of animals by me saying, since I'm vegan, I can't use this, but it's totally fine for you to use this. And I guess there's like a couple ways of thinking about it. I think first, if this is an item that is like a practical item that someone's gonna buy, like I've been gifted gloves before, like leather gloves before, and that's something that people buy. If it's something that's like really frivolous, like just some like weird novelty thing, then maybe my answer on this would change. But I think that if you do then gift that, give it off to somebody else that doesn't have an ethical issue with it, you are potentially staving off their purchase of said like leather gloves or something like that, and maybe the body lotion as well. So like if you're looking at it from like a supply and demand side of thing.
But since this is like a sample lotion, so what if you give this to someone else and they say, oh, I really do like this thing, I'm going to buy, this is not something I would have used before, now I'm going to go out and buy more of it.
I think in a situation like that, I think the best place to offload this type of gift is to like donate it to someone that is in need. You know, not necessarily like a friend that's like super well off and is going to like love the product so much that they then go and just like buy a ton of it. And someone that even like I feel like almost if you remove yourself by donating it to like a shelter who then gives it to somebody else, they're sort of removing, tell me if you think this is like totally off base, they're removing the fact that they know that you're vegan and then you're giving it off. So there's like not that intent of it's okay for you.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, but are you just like, is this just making us feel better? Like, is this just making the vegan feel better about like, oh, okay, I don't need to worry that they're going to think I'm condoning this as the vegan? Does it really make a difference if a non-vegan gave you this sample? Isn't it the same? It ends up exactly the same?
I'm going to say that I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing if it makes us feel better.
But if the person ends up like getting more of the product, eventually liking the product and buying more of it, isn't that going to be the same then?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can never tell what someone's going to do with the money that you give them or the organ that you give them when you donate. Spoiler alert. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't really know where I fall down on that. I feel like you have a response.
No, well, I don't know. I mean, it's certainly like Lisa was pointing out, it certainly would feel different if it was like a meat product or something like that, then yeah. It feels like it's like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. Or could you still say like, I've come in like, I have this product now, should I just donate this thing? Like, even if it is like a meat product or an animal,
would
like
it then be product. Better to actually use the product yourself, because then you are not telling somebody else you're not condoning that thing?
But does it make a difference? Like, if you use the product or not, what's the difference? If you were going to be the one that used the product, you using the product versus you throwing it out.
You using the product and never telling a soul about it versus giving it to someone that then falls in love with said product and continues to buy more of it.
But I'm saying, what's the difference between you using the product and you throwing out the product?
Good question. I mean, even the best vegan lotion or whatever it might be still has some impact on the planet. Like, I am of the mindset that even though certain things that come out of a dumpster would make me uncomfortable to consume, I do think that that's probably one of the most ethical ways for people to obtain things.
Yeah.
Because it's trash. It's been removed as having any sort of economic value.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems weird to live that, like, to be like, oh, I got this free thing, so it's okay that I use it no matter what it is. Because that's this situation is different than, like, dumpster diving, you know? This is like they're sending you this thing because they want you to use it and then like it and then get more of it.
Let me ask, what would you do if you received that gift, Paul?
Honestly, even though I maybe was talking against this, like, I feel like I would probably try to give it to someone in a way that they wouldn't know that it was me that gave it to them, even though
so
I was
you
just...
agree with me.
Yeah. Like, I think... maybe, like, if you go to your, like, donating it to somewhere, I think would probably be my number one option. But if that's, if it's something like, I don't know if this is like a small sample tube, if you could go to a place and be like, I would like to donate this, like, 1 ounce thing.
Why not?
No, maybe you could. But
I know people that collect, like, shampoos and soaps from hotels that they stay at that travel a lot, and then they keep them in bags to give to people in need on the street, or just give them to shelters when they have enough.
Yeah,
I feel like any amount would probably be appreciated.
I stand corrected. But I was going to say, so if that wasn't an option, I think giving it to someone in a way that they wouldn't know that it was you, like if you go to your workplace or something and you just like put out a little sign that says like, please take this or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the most like anonymous way to do it. But then it still falls back on your issue of does that person then fall in love with the product and go purchase it?
I don't know.
Like, is it almost like there's no way to avoid the fact that the existence of the product and someone being given it condones and continues a system of oppression?
This one tiny little tube of lotion has entered into your space, and now you're like obsessing over it for the next year.
So this is what I would do. I would probably give it to someone that needed it.
I think that's fair.
And like, to me, when I think about veganism, I think that when we stress so much about these small things, and maybe I wouldn't be saying this if it wasn't beeswax, but when we stress so much about these situations as if how we react to this situation like is going to take away our V-card or is going to like nullify all of the good that we're doing, like think about it, obviously, like our podcast exists to is that my phone? Our podcast exists to have these conversations for people that, you know, for ourselves to figure out how we feel and to sort of like what are the logical extensions of living a vegan life. But I think that an important part of practicing our veganism is understanding that there are situations like this in which maybe there is not a perfect system. Because I agree that like the thought of throwing it out does seem grotesque to me. When on the other hand, I don't think the value of an animal should be determined by whether or not they're of any use to us, you know, and so people make that argument about we throw away the meat at the grocery store. Well, the animal was of no use, so their life was like a total waste, but I feel like it was still a waste no matter what happened, but there is still something that feels obscene about throwing away food in a country where people are starving or in a world where people are starving. And so for me, things like this go, I don't know if I have the perfect solution. I am comfortable with giving this to somebody, whether or not that's ethically consistent or not, or if it's like the absolute perfect thing to do. It's something that I'm not going to lose sleep over because that, you know, that aids, that lends to like burnout that we experience of this like crushing weight of being the most perfect ethical human being. And things like this, I feel like on the scale of ways that we could possibly contribute to the oppression of animals seems so minute, which is not to dismiss it, but it also, to me, it means not stressing over it so much that it maybe lends to us giving up veganism altogether because we feel like we can't do it all. And we see that kind of thing from people.
Yeah, very astute, Andy. You want to move on to the second one?
Sure. So for anyone that's not familiar with the podcast, this next one's going to be a real crash course in the type of thing we like to get into. This was an anonymous email that was sent in. I was writing to see what your thoughts were on organ donation. On one hand, you are saving a life. On the other hand, if that person isn't vegan, then does that situation create more harm than good? Overall, with the overpopulation issues and global warming, etc., is it better to abstain from organ donation from an environmentalist or animal liberation perspective? For reference, I am an organ donor, but this is just something that is on my mind, and I'm curious what your thoughts are. All right, Paul.
Well, I think the first thing that I thought about was well, this is like what organ, what you're doing by being an organ donor is you're potentially like, you know, saving someone's life or helping someone that needs an organ. Yes, that is what it is. And I feel like if you take that, if like you extend that, what you're doing is you're like helping someone to be healthy. So if I was down with this, with not organ donating, then shouldn't I also be down with like not helping anyone ever who is sick or anything like that? Like, should I not be in favor of hospitals then? Because you can make the same argument. You're like, well, the majority of people that are going into hospitals are not vegan just by population. And so if we didn't have hospitals, then that would help, that would solve that problem, you know?
There's a lot about this question, of which I will say I have seen this position taken by many vegans, which is essentially that, you know, one non-vegan will kill this many animals in their life, and you know, their existence means animals die. So if they die sooner, then less animals die, et cetera.
Bleak.
But, yeah. But I think that when you take this to its extreme, like you just did in that direction, but also I think you could take this question to a different extreme, which is removing even the vegan aspect of this, but saying, why donate an organ to someone? They could become a serial killer. Like, why donate an organ to someone? They could go and, like, rob my grandma or something like that. And there's... I guess certain ends of those extremes that they're like what if scenarios. I mean, I guess obviously the certainty that someone will go and continue to kill animals is like much more certain than someone becoming a serial killer or doing some other minutely bad thing. But I don't know. To me, it's those types of situations that are not, it's not, to me, it's just not a helpful way of framing veganism again. Like, I guess the question that we were just responding to was one that's like really getting down the minutia of like some really small thing. And this is almost like a bigger picture, which to me gets at the sort of the misanthropy that's pretty present within the vegan movement. This idea that we need to have people die in order so they can't hurt animals anymore. And I think that even if you're looking at it from a practical perspective, maybe that's true. But I think that if you're looking at it from a perspective of trying to change hearts and minds and trying to hold ground in a like a political sphere that is a relatable position and one that will help other people go vegan, that it's important to care for the people that you're advocating to. And that if you hate them so much that you would rather see them die than change and go vegan, to me, that's a position that is likely to drive people away, and it's not necessarily relatable.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, if every vegan was like that, why would anyone want to go vegan? You know, it's like, why would anyone want to connect with that type of person? Like, if you are not vegan and you are not of this opinion that no one should be an organ donor, you'd be like, wow, those vegans, they're real jerks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a number of things that, you know, should not be flagship causes of veganism. And it's like, yeah, the reality is the less humans on this planet, the less animals will be harmed. But there's like ways to achieve that that I think don't come from like condoning. If someone was willing to donate an organ and then they're like, actually, I'm not going to, I'm going to withhold this. I'm going to like, that's like something that like PETA does. I'm going to dangle your life over your head. I'm going to withhold clean water from you in Flint unless you go vegan. And to me, that's a tactic that just like doesn't jive with an overall view of liberation for all.
So let me ask you, because this emailer also like framed it from an environmentalist perspective, like an overpopulation perspective. Now, what if this question was framed instead of something that's already done, should we not do that thing? What if there was something that was like, oh, they came up with this new medicine, so now everyone lives to 150 years? Would it be like a good vegan standpoint to be like, we should not be doing that? One, because it's going to make people live longer and eat more animals, but also because it's probably going to make the world even more overpopulated. Like, do you think it would be a vegan standpoint to be like, no, we should not implement this thing that's not a thing yet? But it's kind of like this, except like going a little bit further, you know?
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that hypothetical. It feels like too far-fetched. But
I mean, it's like there's constantly like medicine and science is constantly being like pushed forward so that people live longer. It's not a hypothetical that like every year goes by, like people are, I would guess that the average age, I don't know if this is true, I'm just going to say this as if it's a fact, that the average age is like slowly getting, you know, longer mm-hmm. or further down. So it's not, I feel like it's not really that much of a hypothetical. It's something that's constantly being developed? And is that, should we say like, hey, stop making people live longer. We got enough people on here.
Well, is the extension of that that people should like end their lives in for the sake of helping animals in the long run? Because even the best vegan that is like well integrated into the landscape and eating locally and all of that stuff is still having an impact on this earth. They're probably still killing at least a few animals a year inadvertently, and even that vegan is causing harm, and they would cause less harm if they didn't exist.
I guess that's like not exactly what the emailer is getting at, but kind of in a way of like, oh, if something happens, then like don't do anything, like that's it, like oh, like your time is up.
So it's like less about being proactive and just more about like accepting, like not going on life support essentially.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, I feel like that's not a position that is likely to win over population.
Anybody.
Or anybody. You know, I mean, like the voluntary human extinction movement, that's a thing. I don't think they've really grown in their numbers all that much.
Probably not.
So I guess like to bring it back to this question, I think that if, I don't know, I don't think that the fact that you might save someone that could do something bad, I don't think that's a reason to not be an organ donor. People might have other valid reasons to not do it. But I don't, to me, that's not one that I think is in line with like an idea of like liberation for all. Because I think that we spend a lot of time thinking about what are we burning down, but we're not thinking about like what are we building up and like how do we want to achieve animal liberation. I think how we achieve those things matters. And I think animal liberation goes hand in hand with human liberation. And if we're creating a world that is so misanthropic that our solution to everything is like, well, yeah, you could work on a solution, but actually be better if you were just dead. You know, that's not the type of world that I guess I want to live in, that sees that as a viable solution, as opposed to one that is like working towards helping, you know, collectively helping each other. And I guess with the live episodes, we try not to reference old episodes, but we did do one on population and like whether vegans should be for like human population control, whether voluntary or not. And a lot of our findings were that like the population, it may be an issue, but like the biggest factor is actually the use of the the consumption of people within various populations. And even like one of the poorest people in the US is still consuming more than some of the poorest people around the world. And so I guess I want to push back a little bit against the premise of this email about overpopulation, even though I agree that anyone existing on this planet does cause more harm than them not existing.
Bleak. You want to go to the audience, do some questions?
Yeah, has anybody, if our discussion sparked any thoughts, any questions? Yeah. Shout it out or come on up.
We have a microphone.
It's
official.
Thank you, Ming. Thank you to a shared universe.
Okay. So I went vegan after watching Dairy is Scary and What the Health and Cowspiracy. And my question, I guess, is a talking point because I see those things and they're very striking. And I think even the most hardcore meat eater gets scared by that. But what I'm seeing is there, you know, when I talk to friends about this, who listen to maybe a Joe Rogan podcast, and he has on certain guests that will literally say all that stuff is not true and it's propaganda, it's vegan propaganda. And then you have the other side, the director, saying, well, no, these are based on fact. But then the guys on these other podcasts know that they're all propaganda. It's I feel like we're in an interesting time where there's just so much information. It's so hard to get to see what's actually true. And I guess my problem is when I talk to my friends who are not vegan, they just hear, all they need is that one little bit of doubt. Oh, well, I heard on Joe Rogan that everything you heard is a propaganda. And it's like, it's hard to stand my ground when there is even just that little bit of doubt. And I'm wondering where you guys fall on and have talked about that doubt that is out there. I mean, you go on YouTube, there's one fact, and then there's people that are against that fact, and then people against that fact. And it's confusing. And especially if you have a firm standpoint on something like being a vegan or an anti-vegan, it's just wondering what your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think Shut your mouth, Paul. I think that that's something that we touch upon a lot in terms of the types of information that vegans put out into the world. We have our talking points, and this many gallons of water, and this blah, blah, blah. And then someone comes along, and they're like, well, actually, it's this many gallons of water. And with health-related things, I know that I think Joe Rogan, did he debunk, like, What the Health? I know he's had those directors on there before. That those things can be argued, but we think that it's important as vegans that we get to the core of what this is about, which is that we don't believe that animals are here for us to use, and no matter how well an animal is treated, we're killing them when they did not want their life to be taken, and that, and from a health perspective, that clearly there's a wide body of evidence that doesn't say vegan, a plant-based diet even, is the most healthy thing you could possibly do ever, but certainly that you can live and thrive and be happy and healthy as a vegan. And so I think that a lot of what we talk about on our show is like, get down to those core facts. And those are the things that are irrefutable, and those are the things that you can lean on. So we did a live episode with Carol Adams, and she gave us a talking point that I feel like I fall back on often, which is someone will like throw all this stuff at you, and you can just say, I found out what happened to animals in order for me to eat them, and I don't want to participate anymore. And then they go, but blah, 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 blah. And you're like, I found out what happened to animals, and I don't want to participate in that anymore. So I don't, because I don't need to. So to me, it's just about like, it's fun to throw facts and statistics at people because it feels like we can just like knock people down with all the, how right we are. But to me, it's about getting to the core of what living a vegan ethic's about, which is like, I'm trying to do my best not to harm anyone. And I don't need animals to survive. I don't need animals to thrive. So I'm going to do my best to remove myself from that system.
Yeah, and we've watched like a decent amount of the like the vegan movies that come out, especially the health ones, and like a lot of them do, I guess I'll say unfortunately, it's like I feel like they promise a lot of stuff that for many people, I'm sure many people do have these benefits, but sometimes a lot of the movies, they frame veganism as this like the magic bullet, the one like the cure all. It's like you just need to go vegan and whatever problems you have, like they'll be fixed. And like something that we found that in probably almost all of the health movies at some point say something like that. And it is kind of worrisome, and it is dangerous because all you need is one person to go vegan and not have their, whatever their thing is, not have that fixed. And then they'll be like, oh, okay, well, obviously all of these movies are bogus. So we do definitely try to promote being wary about, like, because there are, you know, it's like, who is it? Jenny Messina? She has the Even Vegans Die. And it's like, there are resources out there that can tell you, like, the realistic benefits of going on a vegan diet, but for every person, it's not going to be my whole life was fixed. For some people, it might be, but I think promoting to the people around you, like, a realistic, like, what realistically is going to happen in terms of the health, but then also, like Andy was saying, in terms of the ethics, it's like, realistically, I mean, it's not a lie for you to say, like, I was participating in this thing, I found out what happened, and now I don't want to participate in this thing. Someone can't, like, they can't argue that you're not participating in this thing anymore. It's like, I feel like if you can give them stuff that's not, that they can't kind of come back at you and say, oh, well, that's not true, then I feel like maybe that's a little bit better. I don't know. Yeah. Does that help at all?
All right. Anybody
any
else?
Questions?
I'll sit up here. So I'm actually not a vegan. I'm here with my vegan best friend. So I came because I'm interested. And I'm kind of, from the discussion so far, there's a blurred line for me between animal rights and human rights and like the privilege that comes with veganism. I work in like the inner city. I've spent 3 years in Camden. So I feel like I'm kind of getting confused, like, where do you start when you want to help the world in general? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that, like, a lot of us struggle with, is that there's, like, a billion problems happening right now. And you said, like, a couple things I think that we could zero in on, and the first of which is, like, that being vegan is a privilege. I think that anybody that chooses what they put in their mouths, what they eat, even though veganism encompasses more than our diet. But if you can choose what you eat, that is a privilege in some way. Paul and I live, you know, middle class, upper middle like lives. So that's like, that's not an experience that we can speak to. But there are a lot of vegans out there. I imagine Vegans in the Hood who are doing their podcast later today can speak to that like better than we can. But there are a lot of people that do live that life and like are vegan. And so I think seeking out those resources is like a good place to start so that you can get information from people that like authentically have that experience. Because we, you know, there are vegans that exist on food stamps. There are vegans that live in food deserts and food swamps and things like that. But like, I don't think that like we don't like fall back and be like, well, someone, this guy's doing it, so you can do it, clearly. But I think seeking out those resources so that you get a better understanding of how people navigate those things.
Oh, and I was going to say, and one of our favorite, or I should say my favorite, I could say our favorite, one of our favorite organizations is Food Empowerment Project, and they're an organization that is like tackling human rights issues from a vegan standpoint. So they work to like help with food accessibility in places like food deserts and food swamps and stuff like that. One of their big things is that they fight against like child slavery in terms of for the creation of chocolate. So they put out a list that's like, basically they emailed all these different people that make chocolate, and they say like, where are you getting your chocolate from? Because you can kind of tell where it's coming from if it's being created using child slave labor or not. So there are organizations that are like doing human rights issues from like a place of veganism too. So it doesn't necessarily have to be like two separate things. But like Andy said, seeking out those people that are doing that work or seeking out those people who have those experiences is probably a better bet than asking these two guys right here.
Okay.
I feel like you had a couple points and maybe we didn't touch on all of them.
I think it's just an overwhelming thing to think about, just because like I've been in experiences with like friends who don't have the money to just even buy like a sandwich or bread and cheese or whatever to like have lunch every day. So it's like there's so much more of that, and I don't like, when do you decide human rights versus animal rights? Because there is no way sometimes to feed people. And even like health literacy, like the average reading level and like for people to comprehend English and whatever we say is a sixth grade reading level. So to explain like health to someone who is like living in poverty, and then on top of that veganism, and then on top of all the ethics, it's like kind of a pretty intense conversation to have with someone.
Yeah, I think that it can seem certainly overwhelming. I think especially when I've talked to Lauren Ornelas, actually the founder of Food Empowerment Project, because they tackle so much stuff. Because there are a lot of people that want to segment veganism is about this one thing. And then there's a lot of people, and we strive to do this, to look at it holistically. And our position is that there, generally speaking, there is not a conflict between animal rights and human rights. And that like liberation for all means liberation for all. And that these things are all kind of intertwined. And again, there's a lot of really great vegan thinkers that do explain much better than we could why those things matter, why you can't really solve one without the other ultimately. But I think that something that I wish we could impart on anyone who is not vegan and hasn't really dove into it is that it's not necessarily about being 100% perfect. Like, we think that that is an ideal that's impossible to hit, and it's about doing the best you can. And that, like, the original definition of veganism is about doing it as far as practicable and possible. And practicable, you know, you're able to practice it. And there are people that are in situations where maybe it's not possible for them to fully practice those things. I think there's a lot of people that are like in our situation that think they can't practice it, and like they just need a little bit of a nudge to be like, oh, it's actually really easy. And there are people that struggle. They don't know where their next meal is coming from. And so it's our job as vegans to not shame people that can't hit that point, and to help people to find access for food. And that there are a lot of groups, like Chili's on Wheels is a vegan food justice organization, and they're basically like a Meals on Wheels type thing. They just feed people vegan food for free in areas where people are of need. And so I think that doing things from our perspective, aiding people that help people that can't quite reach that ideal, that wavy ideal, is important. And for someone that's like struggling with it, like, I wish I could be vegan. I believe that animals are not here for us to use, but unfortunately I don't know where to get some food, or I don't know where to get a non-leather belt or whatever it is. It's about like educating ourselves and then like understanding and being compassionate with ourselves that maybe we can't get to that 100% perfect point right now, but doing the best that we can. Like, we could all stop going to zoos. We could all, you know, hopefully find dollar store toothpaste that wasn't tested on animals, things like that. And like just doing the best we can to strive towards the closest to ideal, but being compassionate with ourselves and with others that don't hit that ideal.
I can also totally understand why coming to this would make it seem more overwhelming, because we're here talking about like, oh, I got this little tube of lotion, what do I do with it? And but like, so in our podcast, we're usually going into like the real nitty gritty, like the minutia of everything. And these are things that most people who are like just like who either have just become vegan or just starting to think about becoming vegan and stuff like that. These are things that most people wouldn't, like, you got, like, you have other stuff to think about, like, oh, how am I going to change my entire diet, you know? So our podcast, I feel like, kind of goes a little, like, a little deeper into it and stuff that, that someone who is probably just starting to be vegan wouldn't really think about or wouldn't think to think about, but, yeah, so there's also that, too.
Yeah, and I guess as far as the overwhelming sense that you sort of portrayed there, is that it can feel overwhelming because there's so much that we want to do and want to help, and we have limited time and resources. And what I found is helpful is just acknowledging, like, I can't do everything, and I can start today with one thing. And in terms of veganism, maybe that means, you know, if I have the ability and the financial resources, whatever, today I seek out a veggie burger instead of like a burger that's made of cow's flesh. Or I pick up a vegan cookbook and I start making, you know, two or three meals a week and experimenting with that, and seeing how I feel, seeing what I like, seeing that I don't die of protein deficiency, all that kind of stuff. And it's just taking it like one day at a time. Some people dive into this stuff overnight, and a lot of people transition in, but people think it's like it's zero or it's 100. And it's like, no, there's kind of a spectrum for a lot of people as they're exploring this thing. Because like, I know for me personally, when I first was thinking about going vegan, it seemed like this giant wall that I couldn't get over. And then once I got over, I looked back, I was like, oh, that wall was like 2 feet tall. That's for me in my personal situation. Not everyone has that situation, but it seems like it's insurmountable. But if you take like one step every day, then you start to get up that mountain.
Right. I guess I'm just thinking more of general population rather than myself. So that's why like it's like the Great Wall of China.
Well, I guess what is your situation?
I was vegetarian for 2 years. I was vegan for 8 months. And then my dad banned me from the house until I ate a Philly cheesesteak. So he wouldn't let me come home because he was like tired of all the veganism. But my dad was a vegan for a couple years way back when. So now I just kind of eat vegetables and plant-based. But, you know, I eat chicken when I feel like I want it.
Are you experiencing like the financial like situation? I mean, I know this is like a lot to talk about in front of strangers. Do you have the financial burden of like a lot of the people that you're talking about?
I do not. But I'm just like, I spend so much of my time with people on Medicare and Medicaid. And like, even just like on my campus when I graduated, we set up a food bank just for students who legit like didn't have a meal coming in. And like, I would go to the store and pick up like cans of tuna and like just the products they need. So I guess like I'm thinking about helping people, making just sure people have food. And as a college student, you know, that was my contribution to the campus. So real, like for a personal, like I can understand like how I can transition to veganism, but in a general level, is it healthy to, you know, is the goal to feed people and fight hunger? Yes, but what's obtainable and realistic?
Yeah, I think that we would love to get your email and we can connect you with some people that are doing that. Like one of our guests on the show, Michelle Carrera from Chili's on Wheels, who is like fighting that at the ground level, like I mentioned, like actually making vegan food, going out and disseminating it. And now they have chapters all over the U.S. People like that could give you a lot of really good information about how to talk to those that, you know, are dealing with incredibly low or no income and how to handle that. Okay. So come give us that email after the show.
Sure.
Got time for another question or two, right?
Yeah.
All right. Anybody got one? Raise that hand. There we go.
Me?
Hi. Hi, Andy and Paul. I'm Lindsay. Hey. This is James. So we've both been vegan for about a year and a half, and we both work in like a corporate office setting where we're either the only or like one of two vegans in the whole building. So I guess my question is, how do you navigate being professional and getting along with superiors who may be a little condescending about veganism? Or because I'm very like pro not being apologetic. I think in the real life with my family and my friends, I want them to see it's not a joke. It's something I'm very serious about, and I would wish they would be serious about too. That's not as easy to talk about with your boss or somebody who you kind of have to be likable and be professional, and you don't want to butt heads in the office. So how do you, I guess, just how do you navigate being professional, being a good employee, but also like sticking to your ethics and not, you know, you don't want to always laugh along and be the butt of the joke when you know it's something that's very serious to you. So have you experienced something like that in your lives, or what would you say?
Andy's a bit of a lone wolf, so I think I'll take this one. So when I was teaching, it's like that's probably the only experience I have where I was like I had coworkers and higher ups and stuff like that. I think I was fortunate that they didn't like make fun of me that much, but I guess I don't know if this helps that much. I mean, in terms of like I feel like I try to keep a low profile in a lot of my life anyways. So it's like I wasn't super duper active about it, but like they all knew that I was vegan, and whenever there was like some food thing happening, I would try to bring something to it to be like, oh, hey, look, all this food is vegan food can be good and stuff like that. But I'm trying to think if I ever, like, they never really made fun of me. I mean, I definitely, like, when there was some event happening that did have food, like, I had the relationship with my coworkers that I was able to like, eat. Sometimes I didn't even have to say it, but I was able to like feel comfortable speaking up and being like, hey, is there going to be something vegan? Which I feel like everybody's situation is going to be different, whether or not you feel comfortable with that. But do you like, is that the sort of thing, like speaking up about it? Like, are you more worried about, or do you just like not want them to talk about it at all? Are you just trying to like keep a low profile, or are you trying to say stuff about it and like advocate for it? Or what's like, what are you trying, like, what is your ideal situation?
I guess it's tough because I think that I want to be professional. I want to be somebody that my boss likes and doesn't butt heads with. Or I think sometimes just being an unapologetic, visible vegan just in itself makes people uncomfortable with you.
Yeah.
Or it makes them not want to go out to eat with you, or it makes them not want to talk about certain things around you. And I don't want people to feel like I can't be their friend, or I can't be likable or something, because I'm going to judge them. But I also don't want it to be like every time they make a joke, like, haha, the vegan. Like,
yeah.
I also don't want to be like, oh yeah, like we're the worst.
Does it come up a lot even if you don't bring it up?
Yeah, I would say when my coworkers asked me what I was doing this weekend and telling them that I was coming down here, it became, you know, just a, that's a thing that you do. And it's a kind of a joke, and it's funny, and I think they do some of that, and they also, I think, are try to accommodate me, but it's they don't get it. It's a lot of just kind of leaning into not making a stand for anything in the moment, because you don't want to disrupt a workplace and try to be likable at work, and especially for, even if you think you're making a stand for something, people might not get it, and you might become unlikable in the workplace.
Yeah, I mean, this is tough, because it's like if you're not even bringing it up and like they're gonna bring it up and make fun of you, it's like that just, I mean, I feel like at some point you can't help that someone's just gonna be a jerk about it. And I understand, it's like you want, it's like, especially if it's your boss or something like that, it's like there's only so much you can, it's like, I think boundaries are important to set, but I totally understand like not feeling comfortable setting those, especially if it's someone who's like has the potential to fire you or something like that. So this is a tough situation. Do you got anything, Andy?
No, I mean, I'm a hermit through and through. I will say, I don't know if you listen to the Vegan Warrior Princesses Attack podcast, but you know, they talk about this stuff all the time because they have their soul-sucking corporate jobs. And you know, Nicole, I think specifically, has talked about times in which, you know, she's come into this position about being like unapologetically vegan, and not necessarily in a way that means you're like this like jerk that's just like spraying your veganism everywhere, but like in a way that you stick up for yourself. And it really does depend on the relationship you have with people. I try to match people's tone. So if I'm doing advocacy work and someone like swears a little bit and like gives me a latitude, I like will jokingly give that back to them because I'm like, that's the level that we're working on here. And that's kind of the way that I handle it. But I totally agree that if it's someone that can fire you, then they're dangling something over your head that it does make it hard. So I have a lot of sympathy for you, even if I don't have a lot of advice.
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you.
I think we have time for one more probably.
This one over here.
Oh.
I just wanted to comment on what you said because I used to work at a corporate job in New York City, and I totally understand I wouldn't get like criticism, but they would just ask me a lot of questions and, you know, say this typical like, where do you get your protein? You know, the first question everyone asks you. And I would just like, I don't know, like welcome the question very openly and like, you know, don't go too deep into it, but give them what they were asking for, you know what I mean? I quit that job, and the last day I brought them in all vegan donuts, like my coworkers, and they were like, they really enjoyed them. Just do like things that are, you know, like bring, you know, that like an act like that, bringing donuts in. It's not necessarily preachy, but it's like, look how good vegan food can be without being like, look how good vegan food can be, you know? So I don't know. Just, I sympathize with you. I empathize actually because I've been there. So
thank you.
All right, Paul. No hot dog eater next to us this time, but it's been a fun time. Bruce Springsteen may have been born to run, but our audience was born to say the following 7 words.
We got the beer today.
Thank you so much for coming. We really appreciate it.